Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 80.
This week on the podcast, megalomaniac Ted Cruz launches a 21-hour filibuster so he can hear himself talk about green eggs and ham.
And we've got a list of compromises the Democrats have made since 2010 for Mr. Ted Cruz's edification.
There's probably no government right now, so take your trifling complaints elsewhere.
And BFF Israel is super mad that the U.S. is now talking to the newbie from Iran. Twitter war is already in the works.
Clinton hating grows ever more popular, proving that we're bigger trendsetters than our wardrobes would suggest.
And Wendy Davis and her pink sneakers are planning to run all the way to the governor's mansion.
Plus, we've got the BTL review of the longest 2 hours of television this week.
All this and more. This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and if you're looking for the play-by-play on the government shutdown 2013 drama, you could check our Facebook page or our website for that information.
Tumblr, anywhere.
Any of those places. Yeah. We're at www.braintrustlive.com, and you can find links to all of our social media presences from there.
Yes. You're listening to this on Monday, so chances are the government has shut down, or is about to, depending on when you're listening to it, because Monday's the day.
Monday's the day. And that comes after a last-minute heroic effort from our very own Ted Cruz.
Oh, man.
A 21-hour filibuster.
This week really had everything. It had a filibuster. It has a looming government shutdown. It just has everything that you want. It has everything that you don't want.
And want. Yeah. It has everything that you want as, like, a writer on The Daily Show. It has nothing that you want as an American
citizen.
And
as a citizen. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So, the week begins with a bang. Or not begins, but... Well, it's a Tuesday.
Yeah, sure.
The news week begins with a bang.
Right.
When Ted Cruz, in the very last hours of, you know, the sort of negotiating time that the Senate has, you know, to avoid to avert a government shutdown entirely, Ted Cruz takes to the floor for 21 hours to talk about some of his thoughts on green eggs and ham.
Yes.
Star Wars, whatever.
Yeah, anything, really.
Anything, really.
It wasn't even a filibuster.
It wasn't a filibuster because there was no legislation on the floor.
He wasn't stopping the vote of anything.
Right.
So...
It was all in support of this budget law that the House has passed that says that we can only continue to fund the House if we defund Obamacare. Like, it has this amendment.
Correct.
And he knows that the amendment is going to get stripped out of the bill in the Senate.
Right, because Harry Reid can do that with a simple majority
once
they sort of decide to vote on it.
And so Ted Cruz knows this.
And the vote was already scheduled.
The vote's already scheduled. He can't stop the vote. So he gets onto the floor and he's like, well, I'm just going to postpone it for as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said, actually, too.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to stand here as long as I can talk.
Yeah.
Which he did. 21 hours.
21 hours. Didn't have to use the bathroom for a whole 21 hours, which is... suspect and maybe gross.
It's not entirely shocking because he seems a little non-human to me anyway.
That's true.
So I don't.
But he did a lot of
what's going on with his organs. I have no idea.
He claimed that his father invented green eggs and ham at one point. He started reading tweets and he would be like, and this guy says, in all caps, blah, blah, blah. Like,
oh, yeah.
He was having a whole lot of detailed discussions about.
Well, and he was also carrying on conversations. Like, he was like talking because like David Vitter was there, I think.
So
because he sort of like is in this. With him, and so they were just sort of chatting it up a little bit, and you know, like you do.
There was like a war of airline analogies between him and Dick Durbin.
Yes,
when Dick Durbin got up
talking
to,
about who was in coach, and
yeah,
who
who's in coach,
not
and who's
even
in
on
first
the airplane,
class, and who's in baggage claim, and a lot of detailed airplane analogies going on there.
Yeah,
and he was still 3 hours shy of Strom Thurmond's record, but I think that was maybe the second longest, like. Guy talking episode in the history of the Senate. He did get some help from some filibuster favorites like Rand Paul, but even Rand Paul, I think at a certain point was sort of like, actually, I don't really want to be associated with this.
Well, they didn't. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are some Republicans like Rand Paul who sort of like, I think are probably like with him on the basis of this, just in that. Well, and a lot of Republicans obviously want to, you know, defund Obamacare and
that's
get rid of it. But I mean, like
a plan of theirs.
It is, as we know. You know, this is the 42nd time they've tried to do it. It's a big plan.
Yeah.
It's the only plan they have. They're not doing anything
else.
That's
it. Yeah. That's all they've got.
They don't really necessarily think that shutting down the government is the way to go to get rid of it.
No, and I mean, because they knew going in that they were going to have to filibuster their own House bill in order to make this happen, they knew going in that they had already shot themselves in the foot. I mean, when he took the floor, a lot of Republicans had already sort of said that they weren't in support of his filibuster.
Right.
because it wasn't accomplishing anything. It was just delaying their ability to negotiate a bill that they actually wanted.
Exactly. I mean, part of this 21 hours episode that he had is basically
it was a waste of
everything that is going to be happening tomorrow on, you know, 10 hours before the government is going to shut down could have been happening over this weekend, because the House was working over the weekend.
Yeah.
They passed something else ridiculous this weekend that Senate is not going to take up, which is why the government is going to shut down, because the Senate does not want to have anything to do with the, quote, compromise bill, as Ted Cruz was calling it on Meet the Press this morning.
P.S. We need to talk about that. There's a few things we need to talk about. We were watching Ted Cruz on Meet the Press this morning.
Yeah.
Well, he obviously was the only news of the week, so he was like the featured player on Meet the Press.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have any interesting thoughts or things to say that make any sense, so that was problematic already. His interview was sort of, like, infuriating and really boring at the same time.
And I think it was also really maddening, because it was almost like as if he wasn't even acknowledge. I mean, Dave, I don't love David Gregory.
No, he's terrible.
I mean, like, he's terrible, but he was actually doing some sense talking.
He was asking some hard-hitting questions, and Ted Cruz was just, like, not really answering them.
And not only was he, like, not answering them, but he was sort of, like, very nonchalantly not answering them in the way that was, like, sort of upsetting, because you wanted him to sort of, like, I almost wanted him to be more confrontational than he was being, but, like, he almost just was sort of, like, blasé about,
like,
the whole situation.
I'm just talking some sense over here about a question you didn't ask,
I know.
I'm ignoring the question you did ask, because that's the kind of
guy
I am.
Which is a thing that politicians do, but a lot of times on Meet the Press, like, because David Gregory was sort of, like, you know, both chambers of Congress had passed this once, we've had a presidential election since then, and he was like, you know, the American people don't want this law overturned, and he kept quoting this 56% poll that say that they don't want to defund the thing, and sort of like, he just was like, yeah, well, but, blah, you know, and it was just sort of like, I hate you!
Exactly. Oh, great, a car alarm was just going off, in case you guys knew. In any case, there were a few talking points that Ted Cruz kept returning to during this interview. One was, he kept saying this over and over, that the facts are becoming more and more clear that Obamacare isn't working. Which infuriated me, because the major parts of the bill haven't started yet.
So he's right.
He's right. They haven't started working yet.
It's not working.
It's not working yet, because it hasn't started.
Right. It's like, not 2014 yet, so it cannot be working.
He kept going through the sense that this was like a job killer and blah, blah, blah. All of these things that they haven't been able to prove, because none of the things that they're claiming are going to happen when the mandate takes hold can have happened yet.
Right.
Because the mandate hasn't happened yet.
And the only things that have gone into effect
are wildly popular
and are working fine. Like, no one has begun spiraling out of control that their 20-something children can stay on their health insurance with them. Like, that's going on right now. People are loving it. The world hasn't ended. Like, nothing is going wrong there.
So that was an infuriating claim that he made over and over and over, which led me to wonder whether he has a real grasp of tense in the English language.
I think that he does. But
I mean,
he
does. He's saying it because it sounds like a compelling talking point.
Correct.
It's infuriating because it can't even be true or untrue. It's not a point that has anything to do with anything.
Right.
That's like me saying that, you know, the space wars aren't working yet because we're not, there's a planet Xenu that we're not bombing yet. And it's like, we haven't found it yet, so we can't, you can't be angry that something that hasn't happened isn't happening.
I like that analogy, by the way.
Was it a Scientology analogy?
Yes,
I think it was.
Yeah, it was. I know.
I couldn't remember whether it was a Star Wars or a Scientology analogy. We were watching...
It's just six one way, half dozen the other.
We were watching Bill Maher earlier today, and he made a Star Wars analogy, and I was like, was he talking about Scientology just now to Fred?
No, and it was Star Trek, actually.
It was Star Trek. God!
Yeah.
I can't get any of this right. It's terrible. In any case, Ted Cruz also went on some weird... like, sort of tangent about the, you know, people in the government, like, not wanting government health care. They shouldn't get government health. They're getting the Cadillac plan and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, are you actively encouraging us to get rid of your health plan? Because I'm for it.
Right, exactly.
You do not deserve government health care.
No.
And you don't have to have it.
No.
You can reject it.
Right. Or you can go back to Canada.
Because
you can have
it
there.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, he specifically, as a Canadian citizen, does not need government health care here. We don't need to be paying for his health insurance.
Uh-uh.
But also... he kept saying that Democrats have never compromised on anything. Because, first of all, here's the first thing that makes me angry. He's claiming that he is compromising in supporting a defunding of Obamacare instead of a full repeal. He kept saying that this was a compromise bill.
As if those were there's a difference between the two of them.
They're calling this a compromise bill to infuriate me personally.
Right.
But he kept acting like somehow defunding a program and getting rid of it are, like, not the same thing.
Right.
Which,
like, Well, we defunded it, but it still exists.
Right. It's on the books. It just has no money. Like, that's not a program, then. No, you can't...
Right.
That's not different. And that, right. I don't think that like, those semantics are going to work with the American people. I don't think people are going to be fooled by that because...
No.
Nobody knows the difference between defunding and repealing.
It doesn't... Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's the same thing.
It's
so
the same thing.
Knowing the difference... You can't know the difference.
No, exactly. But it just sounds like the same thing. Right. So he can say compromise all he wants. Like,
right.
At the end of the day, no one's going to be like, oh, yeah. Yes,
well, but compromise. The new compromise bill that he keeps talking about is that the newest thing that happened yesterday, basically right. after the Senate stripped out the defunding
right.
sort of language out of the continuing resolution, they passed that.
Yeah.
And along party lines, of course.
Right.
And then, so the House basically has to retake it up because now that
right.
they have to get the same...
They,
right, they have... So what they did is they just pushed it for a year.
Yeah.
And that's their big compromise bill.
Yeah.
And now all the Republicans are like, well, we have a plan to fund the government through the... And first off, this plan only goes through like November 15th.
Yeah.
That's like a month and a half.
Why are we going to give up Obamacare for a year so that they can fund the government for 2 months?
Right, and then what do we have to give them in 2 months?
Exactly, everything.
Our firstborns?
Yes. And the rest of Obamacare.
It just doesn't make any sense.
And when they keep using this language like, well, we're just not ready yet. It's happening too fast. And it's like, this bill got passed, like, years ago.
Well, that's... I know Ted Cruz
that's
this morning...
That's infuriating.
I know Ted Cruz was like... Or maybe it was Raul Labrador.
I think it was Raul
Labrador. Because he was on Meet the Press this
yeah.
morning as well. And he was like, can't we just give the American people a year to sort of sit with this? And it's sort of like...
They've
no.
had, like, 5 years to
we've
sit with this.
We've had so many years to sit with this. We had a presidential election to sit with this.
Yeah. We've been sitting up a storm. It's like Sit City over here.
Yes.
There is no more sitting that needs to be done.
Right, and the American people
have been sitting for so long that I'm ready for this fucking mandate to take place because I've been waiting for it for like 4 years.
I know.
There's nothing I want more than this mandate to take place, and I've had to wait so long.
I know. The funny thing is when this bill was passed, the initial reaction from a lot of people on the left and I think a lot of people on the right were like, why do we have to wait so long?
Yeah, exactly.
All we've been doing is waiting.
Like, there's nothing that needs to be set up for 4 years
no.
to make this bill happen.
Well, there is apparently.
We'll get to that later.
That
could have been set up if it had been time to set it up 4 years ago. But in any case, Brent and I thought that we would go through some of the major compromises that the Democrats have made
right,
in the last few years
because
he seems to have forgotten them.
Right. And if the Democrats are doing anything, it's compromising up a storm. And if the Republicans are doing anything, it's making the Democrats compromise
yeah.
up a storm because they're just being
and
crazy ideologues.
Not moving from their crazy, crazy positions
yeah.
on like
yeah.
the far, far right.
Right, exactly.
So we're going to begin with the original Obamacare compromises because as you might remember, the original Obamacare bill that Democrats were supporting had a public option
yes.
in it. Guess what had to go when the Republicans got involved?
That.
And at the time, we had a majority in both houses. This
right.
was to get over. This was to get the ability to vote. This was a filibuster-proof bill. You know, this was to get us just the ability to vote on this in the
yeah.
Senate. This had a majority of senators behind it with the public option.
Yeah. Now, in the Republicans' defense of this, a lot of to do with the public option leaving was the king of the assholes, Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
He was ruining this healthcare bill
up
a storm.
He was ruining things
up a storm.
It was conservative Democrats who were siding with the Republicans
right.
and Republicans.
But still, it was a compromise that the people on the left had to make.
And it was a compromise that from the original language of the bill.
Correct.
They also had to lower the fines that people pay to not, you know, when the mandate goes into effect, you're going to be fined if you don't have health insurance.
Right, it's going to be like a tax fine, basically.
Yeah, a tax
yeah.
fine. They had to lower the fine significantly for people, for higher income people. Lower income people still pay
yep.
the same fine. Higher income people pay less. They raised the threshold for the number of employees that you're required to have to provide health insurance
yep.
for your employees. So that went from, I think, 30 to 50 or something like that. They denied undocumented people the rights to participate in the exchanges.
Which is so stupid. Because the reason that healthcare is
so
expensive is because we have all these people who, like, don't qualify for insurance. And once
their bills in the ER. Taxpayers are paying their bills right now. If
yes.
they could get preventative care, that would be so much cheaper than
right.
us having to pay for every emergency that they have.
But their just seething hatred for undocumented workers was
infuriating. You can imagine that no federal funding in this bill or any other bill goes towards abortions.
Well, duh.
But that's a compromise, a big compromise, I would argue. And also, they allowed doctors to have conscience protection so that a hospital can't sort of retaliate against a doctor for refusing to perform an abortion.
Yeah.
Even if it's in the, you know, even if the health of the mother is at stake.
Yes.
Like, that's infuriating as well. Then we move on to the rest of 2010.
Right.
The Bush tax cuts were set to
right.
expire.
Do you remember when Obama ran for president in 2008 and said that he was going to let the
except
Bush
for
tax
when up. He extended them for 2 years
right.
in order to
except,
appease the Republicans
right.
so that they could end Don't Ask, Don't Tell and pass the 9/11 health bill.
Yeah.
Do you remember the original debt ceiling compromise?
That was a giant clusterfuck.
That was the worst compromising that any Democrat has ever done. Because if you're wondering why we have so much just, like, plain tomfoolery going on right now at all levels of government, it's because basically they passed all of these mandatory unspecified cuts in that bill and then put a fake committee on somehow figuring out what those cuts were going to be. And obviously no one could – there's nowhere to cut that – everyone was gonna agree to cut.
Right.
So that's why the sequester happened.
That's why we had the sequester, yeah.
Exactly. Do you remember in 2012 when contraception coverage was going to kick in under Obamacare and we suddenly had to exempt religious institutions? How 2 years after the bill passed, suddenly religious institutions were like, wait a minute. We've known that this was in the law for 2 years, but we can't allow this to happen.
Right.
We've just decided to create a scandal out of nothing.
And even though they weren't the ones who were happening to do it anyway, it was basically
health plans that they were using. So this would have
So it didn't have anything to do with them at all.
It had nothing to do with them. Do you remember in 2013 the compromises that we made to avoid this, or that we offered to avoid the sequester?
Yes.
Where the Republican proposal was like, well, we'll just have all of the cuts that we had proposed originally, and that's the plan. And the Democrats were like, well, we'll make a lot of cuts, but we'll sort of like have to temper that with some other things. And the Republicans were like, nope, if it's not all the cuts, it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And that bill, the Democratic Compromise bill, passed in the Senate, but because it only had 51 votes and not 60, it got shot down.
Right.
And the Republican plan only had 38 votes. So that wasn't even all of their own caucus.
Right.
Their own people voted against that bill because it was so crazy.
Yeah.
Were you going to... You weren't going to add something. You were just agreeing with me.
I was,
anyway,
yes.
Do you remember 2013 when we offered every concession under the sun for the freaking gun control legislation that we were all going to champion because 26 children were massacred in a school? Well, nothing happened there because every concession that we offered them was too much. It was still too much legislation. We couldn't, we can't, you know, infringe on people's right to bear arms.
Right, I know. Basically, that got reduced so much that it was
that
basically
it was
just sort of like,
people
in mental institutions can't have guns was basically what it was by the time it was done, and we still couldn't even get that passed.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. Do you remember the 2013 immigration compromise with the Dream Team, the Gang of Eight?
That was the Gang of Eight.
Compromise city, because that included nothing helpful to anyone. It was like,
right.
It made
a
path to citizenship
giant...
so onerous that like it wasn't worth passing.
Right, and it was basically just like a shit ton of money to like
to the border.
Lock down the border.
Exactly. That couldn't pass, even though that included like none of the principles that the Democrats had originally brought to the table to begin with.
Also, this is a good time, is sort of like tangentially related to
Let's
this,
say.
But we should remind everyone that We told you that the immigration bill wasn't going to pass months and months ago.
And because we know all,
we see the future.
Yeah, we see the future.
Often.
But so these were all major pieces of legislation, the sort of defining legislation of the last 3 years.
Basically everything.
Everything that's
all
happened since Obama got elected
had to give in on.
Was a compromise of some sort. We've done nothing but compromise.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz, I think, would be wise to remember what positions the Democrats started with to begin with. Because the Democratic Party that we're seeing right now is the compromise party. It's the only party talking any sense because they've basically compromised to the extent that people who would have otherwise been Republicans in a more reasonable time are now having to be moderate Democrats.
Well, and they're the only party that can govern.
It would be
helpful if the Republicans could sort of like get their act together. I mean, I sort of love that they're eating their own to a certain degree, but I mean, like, we wouldn't be having a government shutdown if like anybody in that party had knew their ass from their elbow.
No,
I mean,
it's so true. It's that's the problem with having an opposition party that doesn't believe in government.
Right.
You can't run the government if you don't believe in it.
Right.
There's nothing for you to do then. Like, go home and stop using taxpayer dollars to pay for your health care if you don't believe in government.
Yeah.
And so that point that he made about the Democrats not being willing to compromise, I think was the one I found the most infuriating of everything that he was saying.
Yes.
Because
total.
For people like me and Brent, there has been only compromise.
Yes.
Me and Brent are so far to the left of where the Democratic Party has recently wound up.
And not only has there been too much compromise, but the compromise has started from not far enough to the left. The reason that we've ended up with all of these terrible compromise bills is because we've started with the moderate position and then ended up with the Republican position, as opposed to starting with the progressive position, which is sort of like what we felt like we got promised we were going to get.
Exactly.
And then we've ended up
in the middle somewhere. That didn't happen.
No. We haven't ended up in the middle on anything. We've ended up with a...
I would argue, and you would agree with me, that... The original Obamacare legislation, because it was a, quote, compromise that found us agreeing with a policy that the Republicans suggested and championed for years before we actually got any healthcare legislation.
Right.
That we didn't, because our sort of, like, starting point for that legislation was a single-payer plan.
Yes.
So the public option was the compromise. Well, we couldn't even get that compromise passed. We ended up with a plan that the GOP itself invented.
Well, exactly. And I think it's so funny because, like, I think one of the main points that the Republicans keep bringing up is, like, that this plan is so complicated and it's, like, 2,000 pages long and nobody has read it, nobody understands it. And the only reason that we ended up with that being the plan was because we couldn't do it the easy way because you wouldn't let us.
Yeah.
Had we done it the easy way, it would have been, like, the plan could have been on one page.
Yeah.
It would have been, like...
My ideal plan is a piece of legislation that's currently sitting in the New York State Legislature, and it's, like, 2 pages long.
Yeah.
It's a plan that just says that the government's going to provide health care to everyone, and that all doctors will be paid for by the state.
Perfect. Everyone could have read that.
I read it, and I was like, I get what this is saying. I don't rarely understand what legislation is saying. That's some nonsense. I had to read the 9/11 health bill, and I was not happy about that. I couldn't understand a word that was being said in that. But this plan was, like, the state provides health care.
Period.
The plan. Like, yeah. That's not hard.
That's a one-page plan. It was you it was the Republicans that have made it so that plan couldn't be our current plan.
Exactly.
So.
Well, their plan is shorter because it's no plan.
Exactly.
It's an invisible plan. Their plan is to have no plan.
Correct.
And that they're succeeding.
Right.
They don't have a plan.
No.
They love the system as it stands.
Yes.
Which is questionable. But possibly they don't know because we're paying for their health care. I want somebody to be making a big enough deal out of challenging those Republicans who are so against, quote, government health care about the fact that they're taking taxpayer-funded health care right now,
yeah,
that they all have to give it up.
Yep.
I want to see what happens then. Because I know those are all rich guys. I know they can afford their own plan. But when they find out what the premiums that people pay right now are for that kind of health care, I mean,
yeah,
then they'll know.
I know.
So I'm ready to challenge them on that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ted Cruz is not making any friends.
No.
Doing this.
Hating Ted Cruz has been really popular this week, and what we found as we were sort of, like, doing some research on all the Ted Cruz hate is that it's not new.
Long history.
It's not new.
Long history.
It goes back to before anybody even knew who Ted Cruz was.
Yeah.
And it goes back to his own party with George W. Bush.
Yeah. A Texas friend of his.
Yes.
Where he was working for the Bush legal team in 2000 and wanted to get a job with the administration.
Right. Presumably he was doing this to get a job.
Exactly. And he would, like, first of all, he would send a lot of stupid work emails in the middle of the night, which is a thing that me and Brent have both dealt with at various times on jobs and is the most infuriating thing that coworkers can do.
But it was funny, though, because, like, basically all of the people who he was working with thought that they accused him or they suspected him of writing them and then, like, setting them to, like, be sent in the middle of the night, basically, to sort of, like,
look like he was working at all hours.
Yes.
And then he would also send out, like, newsletters with updates about what he'd been up to, like, frequently.
To everyone.
Like the Ted Cruz update.
Yeah.
Like the kind that your mom sends
like
at Christmas
newsletter.
To all of your great aunts.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if he included cheesy pictures as well.
Oh,
those
I bet.
Always come with Christmas
those
letters.
Always come. Well, not with our Christmas letters.
Oh, mine do. And they're always photocopied and they're always sort of, it's a suspect situation.
Yeah.
But
that's a thing that I imagine.
Probably a Midwestern thing.
I was going to say, I think the whole Midwest is probably doing that. But in any case, you may remember that Dianne Feinstein,
right,
not a fan of his. They got into fisticuffs. Can you imagine Ted Cruz and Dianne Feinstein getting into fisticuffs?
I think she could take him.
She could definitely take him.
Yeah.
He looks like such a wimp.
Yeah.
But they got into a bit of a snit over gun control legislation.
Yes.
And earlier than that, and both times I think she had to tell him that she was not a sixth grader and he didn't need to condescend to her.
Right, and she also sort of like laid the smack down because like they were talking about, I mean, he was attempting to explain the Constitution to her.
Right.
And she was like, not necessary. Also, you probably don't get it anyway.
Right.
Also, he's Canadian, so his familiarity with the Constitution may be suspect anyway.
Yeah.
But, and they were talking about gun control, and lest we forget, and she had to remind him of this, I mean, she sort of, like, came to power, at least in San Francisco, when the mayor of San Francisco and Harvey Milk were assassinated. That's how she took over being the mayor of San Francisco.
That's how her political career took off.
And she witnessed this. I mean, she sort of, like, saw people murdered. So, she knows about gun control.
She's a person who's familiar with the problems of gun violence and gun control itself.
She did not need it explained to her by Ted Cruz.
Especially because the year that she entered power was the year that Ted Cruz was born. So
she's old.
Her first elected office was in the year that Ted Cruz was born.
Yeah.
She's like 1 trillion years old.
Yeah.
So, and at the time that he was born, he was Canadian, so
Yeah. He really didn't know what was going on in San Francisco.
Exactly. No. meanwhile, the congressional Republicans are sort of over him as well.
Right.
He's just causing trouble for
everyone. Well, he's causing trouble for everyone, and I think that everybody just basically sort of, I mean, whether they like his policy, sort of like...
It's the grandstanding.
It's the grandstanding, because, like, sort of the initial hatred for Ted, well, not initial hatred, but sort of like, the congressional Republicans got really upset with him because, like, he was doing a lot of grandstanding about when we were talking about gun control.
Yeah.
Because basically all the Republicans sort of felt like that legislation was going to die anyway due to some of, like, the red state Democrats, like,
right,
assholes like Joe Manchin and people like that, exactly, from West Virginia. So they were just wanting him to shut the hell up,
yeah,
because they felt like that it was going to be the Democrats who were going to kill it anyway, and that they didn't need him sort of, like, deflecting everything back onto the Republicans.
Right. The more he talked about it, the more it looked like it was their fault.
Right, and he couldn't stop himself.
No, couldn't keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the sort of biggest foe of his,
yes,
of late and of early, is
of all
is
time,
our very own John McCain.
Yes,
he's not ours. I don't know why he's saying that about people.
He's like the sense talker of this,
like, what
Republican
is going
party
on?
For that, and that's upsetting.
That is upsetting. When you can't have a Lincoln Chafee anymore, and your sense talker has become John,
right,
McCain,
he's
John Maverick McCain.
Yeah, he's getting back to his Mavericky days.
Yeah. He just likes to be disagreeable in whatever way he can.
You know, want to know what's so funny about this is that he hates him so much, and the person who has sort of, like, hitched her wagon to him more than anyone else on the planet is Sarah Palin.
Yeah,
like, she just wants to be photographed with Ted Cruz
like, up a storm,
all over the place. And John McCain can't even stand the sight of him. It's,
yeah,
sort of like,
I have a feeling that part of the reason that he can't stand the sight of him is because Sarah Palin him are such buddies. I think that John McCain rightfully blames her for destroying his presidential ambitions.
I don't think that's fair to her necessarily. She didn't help. But
I don't think that it's. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he necessarily would have gotten elected.
He was going
to lose
that anyway
because he was a terrible candidate.
Yeah.
But I think that he rightfully
and the time was just not right for him either,
exactly,
with what was going on in the world. I mean, especially after
course
the crash happened, there was no way he was.
He was
win
just
that
like
election
not the right guy.
He could have
for
had
that
Jesus as his running,
right,
mate, and, like, he was screwed. I mean, so
yeah. I think that that sort of strain of Republicanism really gets his goat because I think one of the reasons that his campaign took a nosedive because,
yeah,
his own supporters weren't really interested,
like,
in backing,
what,
her, and,
yeah,
he looked so unreasonable with her.
Yeah.
And so I think that he thinks Ted Cruz is making his party look unreasonable again.
Right.
Which he is. And he was angry over the filibuster, over Brennan.
Brennan, yeah, because
that was the initial anger sort of episode.
Well, right, and I think that his sort of, like, more, you know, I think John McCain is sort of, like, one of the old school Senate guys,
yeah,
and he sort of, like, thinks he's one of the people who, like, wants there to at least be a sense of decorum,
but
even if you're sort of, like, debating with each other. And
to govern something.
Right.
He's not a Boehner. He's not there to just deflect legislation.
Right.
He believes it's his job to govern. He doesn't
to
believe it's his job
done
to govern policy that Brent and I would agree with.
No.
But he believes that he's there to pass legislation, not to just, like, deflect it.
Right.
And guys like Rand Paul aren't interested in passing things.
No.
They're only interested in stopping things.
Yeah.
They're interested in shutting government programs down. They're interested in making cuts. They're not interested in doing anything productive.
Right.
And I think that is sort of, like, troubling to his sense of, like, what his, like, purpose is there.
Yes.
And now I'm sure he doesn't know what to do with himself.
Right. And he called, because Rand Paul was also in on that,
right,
filibuster with Ted Cruz of
Rand Paul
Brennan
would get in on any filibuster.
Totally. And so John McCain called them wacko birds, which is hilarious. And then one of his advisors also told whoever was writing this piece,
right,
that, I think there's a piece on Cruz in GQ,
yeah,
coming up. And he said that he fucking hates Cruz was the words that the McCain advisor
used.
Well,
and this filibuster he called, quote, an extended oratory.
Yes.
And got angry because, lest we forget, McCain is a World War II, I mean, a vet. He's not a World War II
no
vet.
But he's old enough to be.
He's old
probably
enough to be. I know.
Right.
I was like, wait, as I was saying that, I was like,
no,
that's not the war I'm talking about.
No.
He's a Vietnam
vet.
And Ted Cruz was making some comments comparing the sort of, like, what's going on right now to, like, Nazis.
Taking down the Nazis.
Like, taking down the Nazis. Like, he was basically comparing.
It was ridiculous.
The
he
Democrats
caught a lot of
flack, to
right
Nazis.
Yeah.
And McCain, who is nothing if not a guy with a war record of some sort, because he's crashed like 500
crashed
airplanes.
So many planes.
Took some major issue with that. I think rightfully.
Yeah.
Because you got to be careful when you're bringing up Nazis ever.
That's not great.
That's not great. And in any case, he also would like to be done with this Obamacare thing. I think he has said multiple times that the people spoke on Obamacare when they reelected Obama. And he doesn't like it, you know, as much as the next guy. But he was part of the party when they suggested it in the first place.
Well, right.
So this is not that far off for him.
No. And the thing is that I think that so many people are sort of like, you know, there are Republicans and Democrats who are like, we're going to sort of have to fix some things with Obamacare.
Yeah.
And even Obama at one point, I think, was quoted as saying, I don't remember it specifically, but he said something along the lines of, like, you know, the Republicans think that I'm going to have started, like, the first huge government program that's not going to have any problems.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I'm sure that Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and any of these sort of programs, like, didn't sort of, like, start on the day that they were supposed to start and then, like, you know, have...
flourish.
We have to fix those things all the time. We're always passing things to, like, make sure that we're continuing to fund Social Security and Medicare, and we're adding people
changes,
to Medicare and Medicaid.
The context of these programs changes over time, too, so you have to be on your toes about that kind
of
stuff.
So is Obamacare perfect? I don't think anybody thinks it is. I don't think Obama thinks it's perfect.
No.
But you sort of have to... You have to at least let it start before you can know what is imperfect about it.
No, exactly.
So...
Well, and I think John McCain probably, just because he's been in office for so long and represents a state that's only full of poor people and old people, knows that some action needs to be taken on healthcare reform.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
I don't think
so many people, so every party has known this forever. I mean,
yeah.
Nixon tried to do something with
yeah.
healthcare. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, I think that sort of like, for some of these old guard Republicans, like, I think that there is that knowledge that something needed to be done. They may not like everything that's in it, but everybody knows that, like, that's killing the economy. I mean, the rising healthcare costs.
Yeah.
And sort of like, we can't keep letting it go on.
Have
so
a
is Obamacare
economy
perfect?
And have...
Maybe not, but you have to do something.
You have to try. Yeah.
You can't just not try.
Well, and someone like McCain should be comfortable with this legislation because this is legislation that means windfall profits for insurance companies.
Right,
Their party invented it for a reason, and it's because it provides corporate profits.
Exactly.
That's what that's about.
Right.
This is going to be a huge windfall for insurance companies. It was in Massachusetts, and it's going to be nationally.
Right. Have you heard about insurance companies complaining about Obamacare?
No.
No, you haven't.
You know why?
Because they're going to get rich.
They're going to get rich because the entire country is going to be mandated to buy something from them.
Yes.
That's like...
I would love everyone to be mandated to buy something from me.
Exactly.
It'd be great
for my business. If people wanted to buy thoughts from me for...
Yeah.
You know, $3 a piece.
Well, not even wanted to if they were forced
to. If they were forced to buy thoughts from me for $3 a piece, then I'd be a rich woman. Yeah, this is not...
And insurance is like $300 a month.
Exactly.
So $3 is child's play.
It's child's play. No, I mean, this is something that is pro-business. It's not pro-business in a way that I would like to see things be pro-business. It's not the cheapest way to do this.
Not even
If you
close.
Are worried that Obamacare is going to cost you too much money, let me tell you, a public plan would cost far less.
Well, and that's the other thing about this plan is that I think people forget too often is that this is fully paid for.
Yeah.
It's paid for by some taxes. It's paid for by some potential fines that people are going to have
mm-hmm.
to pay. So those are things that we can debate whether we like or not. But it's not like we've started this huge government bureaucracy that is like going to like bankrupt the country
exactly.
because that's wrong. That's factually inaccurate.
The way that this program is set up is it's mostly paid for by you, individually, as you go and buy health insurance.
Well, right, exactly.
That's not
but there
a
are
tax.
A lot of, most people sort of like qualify for subsidies and
no,
things like that.
No, of course, it's cheaper than you having to pay for the plan individually without government subsidies.
Right.
But I'm saying like this
but
is
those
not
are also things
this
that
is
were...
not starting some sort of massive institution that
no.
we're then going to fund the like retirement, you know, pensions for everyone.
Yeah.
This is a plan in which everyone has agreed to act in a certain way, and in doing so, it will make it cheaper for everyone. This is not a plan that you can just defund because there's not most of the plan is not there to defund. It's not like and the threat of this budget passing has nothing to do with it because most of the plan is already paid for outside of this budget.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sort of like first of all, hitching it to the budget is crazy anyway.
It's crazy.
But second of all, acting like this is going to be some major drain on the economy is insane.
That's not.
Anyway.
Yeah,
because
it's not.
It's going to be cheaper for every single person.
Yeah.
In America. So, that's our piece about that.
That's
So, yeah, the GOP in the House passed a bill, like we said, that would push it for a year. The Democrats have said they would veto that. They better stick to their guns because if there's nothing we like better than taking something that we said we definitely wouldn't do and doing it
anyway.
I know.
I don't think Obama's going to do this.
This is his only legacy. Like, there's no reason to. And also, as I was saying to Brent, I was like, shut down the government for 3 months, let Obamacare kick in, and then try to defund it because people are going to like it by then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's once it kicks in and everyone's like, well, I can just go to the doctor. I mean, they said they did that study in, I think, Oregon where they did two sample groups of people that were receiving, like, Medicaid or something like that. And they found that the people who, like, had health insurance, and it was, like, something where, like, the actual health care costs weren't cheaper if you gave people health care instead of making them pay for it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it, people without health care going to the ER was not necessarily cheaper overall. But everyone was happier. If people with health care are, like, literally happier than people without health care.
I can imagine.
Everyone happier because they just felt like this huge weight was lifted off their shoulders.
There's less stress.
There's less stress.
Mean, yeah.
And that ultimately has to be good for the economy.
Right?
Because optimistic people are better shoppers.
Yeah, that's right.
In other news, even though we had to do that whole nonsense where we allowed religious institutions to not provide contraception coverage for their employees, now Republicans want to also sort of like make that a broader thing. They put into this same legislation that they
are putting forward. Right, the one that delays it a year.
They put a conscience clause into that that would allow any employer to not provide contraceptive coverage.
Well, and insurers.
And insurers to not provide contraceptive coverage. This, first of all, is not going to pass. But second of all, blows my mind.
It's so
because
crazy.
Because this is just the kind of thing that loses female voters for them.
It totally is. And
this
I just
is
don't,
only a thing. This is ends up being a tax on women. That's why you can't do it. That's why it's not legal to do.
Well, right. And that's part of what Obamacare is that I think once people realize, there's so many pieces that people
don't
realize. But one of the things that it has is measures to make sure that women do not pay more for healthcare than men do. Because right now that they do.
They do. Yeah, they do. And it's not like women have more health problems. Women just have the burden of life. Like, it's not like women are inherently unhealthy or, like, it's not really even that it's more expensive to insure them. It's that there's, like, that women are sort of, like, the only people that get pregnant.
Correct.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And that affects men and women.
It does.
So that ends up being a tax on everyone, ultimately, but people just don't see it that
way. But this is just, like, so ridiculous because it's sort of, like, there's no reason, like, I mean, if women are against birth control, they don't have to get it from their healthcare provider.
You're not required by law to take birth control
no.
as a person.
Nope.
No, that's and unlike what who was it? Was it Rush Limbaugh would have you believe that you need to take birth control per the number of times that you're having sex?
Oh,
it's
right.
It's one birth control per sex outing or whatever I said on the very first episode of this podcast. Because that was, by the way, the issue that opened this opened Brain
Trust
Live.
Yeah, Sandra Fluke.
Yeah, Sandra Fluke. Rush Limbaugh believed incorrectly that you needed more birth control for more sex.
Yes.
And that is not how it works.
No.
So it's not like women being skanky is more expensive for society.
No.
That's not what it is.
No.
Women having sex once a year but being on birth control is the exact same price for society as a woman who has sex seven times a day. Yeah. That's just to clear that up.
Yeah.
In slightly annoying news,
the
exchange is open on the 1st. We're super excited about that. We're going to be checking up a storm just for the fun of it.
Covered California.
Yeah, covered California. We're going to be all over it. We've been watching a lot of Jacques and Julia and seeing commercials for it.
Oh, that's right.
But apparently a lot of the healthcare exchanges are not quite ready, so there's going to be some glitches.
Yes.
Like, some of them don't have their Spanish language sites up, like in Nevada, where everyone speaks Spanish who's uninsured, so that's going to be problematic.
Problem. Yeah. They should have started with the Spanish language version in Nevada.
English speakers have healthcare there. It's fine. But a lot of the exchanges are doing, quote, soft launches.
Yeah, well, that's what they're, I think they've just recently started
about.
Calling them that, probably. But yeah,
Republicans are going to complain that Obamacare is failing because the health...
Right, but this sort of, like, goes back to that whole situation where, you know, you can't necessarily, like, launch a program and have there be no issues.
Right, yeah.
The only potential problem that I see with this, besides just generally being annoying, is that to be fully insured on January 1, you have to have signed up by December 15th. If they're not working until November, that really doesn't give you a lot of time to sort of, like, make a super informed decision, and if you're not signed up by December 15th, and you're not covered on January 1st, then you're going to have to start paying fines.
Yeah.
So I think that there has to be, like, a certain reasonable amount of time for people to be able to make a decision on what to buy before we can start fining them next year.
Yeah.
Because that seems a little disingenuous and sort of, like, unfair for people.
Something tells me that will come up in court and get addressed before the fines start getting charged.
Probably.
I think that's... Because the reason that they...
But that's the whole mandate, though.
I think that they're starting, they gave a certain amount of time specifically because they wanted people to have a certain amount of time. I would guess, and I think that this is something that Democrats and Republicans will agree on, that, you know, they'll want, like, whatever time was promised, essentially.
Probably so. Or, like, if you've gotten yourself covered by, you know, April or something.
Right.
You know, like,
they'll
probably come up with some sort
fines,
of, like, arbitrary sort of, like, fine situation.
Something tells
like
me everyone's going to raise a big stink about this, and they're not going to want to lose everyone's support, and it's going to be a whole thing.
Right.
I'm not super worried about that, but I am annoyed because we are so excited about the exchanges opening, and they had 4 years to get it right.
I know. Well, I think California is supposedly, like, we're fine.
Yeah.
We're doing everything.
California
And as we actually watched, we just watched on
Bill Maher.
We watched Bill Maher because he did his whole new rules thing was sort of, like, about, like, how great California is and how we're sort of, like, going to drag the rest of the country into sort of, like, our, as he said, liberal fagtopia,
right.
I think is what he said.
Yeah.
And, but he was talking about how California, we've talked a lot about on the podcast that it looks like the exchanges are, like, going to work sort of, like, smashingly well, basically. Like, we've got our shit together there, and because it appears as though they're going to work so well, there has sort of, like, a new push to move toward a single-payer system in California.
Yeah.
So
That would be
awesome. Like, I really hope that, like, California just, like, crushes this exchange situation.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I know. Well, it's what he was basically saying is it's like how the textbook industry basically bases all of their work off of Texas's curriculum. So when Texas decides that they're going to teach creationism or something in their classrooms,
right.
the whole country ends up doing it because all of the textbooks are based on Texas because they're the biggest market.
Right.
We're the seventh biggest economy in the world, I think, or something like
yes.
that. We're a huge market.
Right.
And so we...
So, like, once we're all insured...
We're, like, a major market for a lot of different things. And, you know, we're an agricultural exporter. We're one of the biggest agricultural exporters in the world.
Yeah.
So when we decide that we're... And this is what I've been saying for a long time about why I was so supportive of New York State doing this, and California is just, you know, it's the same thing. I think that if the big states prove that a single-payer plan works, the little states will have to follow, because... Who wants to live in a fucking middle-of-nowhere little state where you don't have health care
right.
when if you live in a city with good food and other people, you could also have health care? Like,
I know.
The deterrent to living here is not that it's not good here. You know, it's not that it's not you don't have opportunities here and it's not great here. It's that it's fucking expensive to live here.
Well, right.
But once the expense stops being the issue, because health care is a major expense in small states
exactly.
where they don't have a big enough pool to really offset the cost of insurance. That's why exchanges are so important in states like that. If you live in a state like Wyoming, your prices are going to be a lot higher than they are in a place like California because you just don't have enough people there. If big states start to prove that this single-payer plan is cheaper for them, little states are going to have to follow suit.
Totally.
Like, there's no way that doesn't happen. So I've been saying that for a long time because I've been a big proponent of New York State
right,
passing their bill.
Right.
And California has a similar bill that's on the table and is the same.
Well, and there's no earthly reason why California shouldn't be able to pass that, because we now have filibuster-proof majorities in both houses of our legislature, and we have a Democratic governor who I think would probably sign it if it got to him.
I think he would. So do it, Jerry Brown, by the way, because I supported you in your primary against Bill Clinton.
I know.
In, like,
you know
92.
What? It's too bad Jerry Brown is so freaking old.
I know.
Because... Because he also turned... We had a huge budget
deficit.
Yeah,
we have deficit. A surplus now,
we
by the
way,
guys.
We have a surplus. Yeah.
Did you know that?
If you're not in California and you think that California is, like, a big flaming shitstorm of, like, a mess...
You would have
not,
been right 4 years ago.
But not any
but you're
longer.
Not anymore.
Because we have a surplus.
Yeah.
Budget surplus in California.
Yeah. Can you imagine that? You
know
what we did? We raised taxes here. We made some cuts and we raised some taxes. And we did it. We just put up with it.
Yep.
Why? Because the whole state was falling apart. So why not?
And we're all still here.
We're all still here. We didn't... Business did not leave California over that. We still have an economy here.
Yep.
Big
one.
The seventh biggest in the world, I believe. But in any case, the other big news of the week, aside from Ted Cruz, was that the U.S. and Iran are talking.
Yeah, for the first time.
For the first time in a long time.
Since 1979.
They have a new president in Iran.
Who's sort of, like, acting like he's a moderate. Which sort of... What he, whether it's sort of disingenuous or not, I don't know. But I mean, that is sort of like what he ran on. And he got elected that way. So
and
who knows? I don't know.
I think that most people in Iran probably are ready for this, because you don't live in a country and think, you know, I'd love to go to nuclear war with the biggest power in the world. Like,
no.
The biggest nuclear power in the world and us should get into a skirmish. Like, you're not sitting around and thinking that.
No.
You're sitting around and thinking, holy shit. How can we get this guy to stop talking
right.
so that we cannot have a nuclear war?
And you're also thinking, holy crap, these economic sanctions that we've had on us for the last 35 years are some crazy bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in any case, Oh, we're having a plumbing episode. Among other things. This is a new thing.
Yeah.
Our sound studio has been invaded by water sounds. In any case, Hassan Rouhani came to the UN. He spoke at the UN, and then he went and spoke to the White House.
Yes.
Well,
he wasn't sort of initially because they were supposed to be seen at the UN together. There was supposed to be sort of like a handshake opportunity, and then like that didn't happen, and he sort of like declared that it was too early for them to be speaking directly to each other, and I think that was, a lot of people have sort of acknowledged that was probably because like he sort of didn't want to be seen necessarily doing that to like appease all of the hardliners, because there's still a lot of those back in Iran. So he still is sort of, he just recently got elected.
And it was small majority.
He's still, exactly. He's still sort of like walking a fine line, I think, basically. But
I think this is maybe, though, a good sign, just because I would hate to see something like this happen and then have internal turmoil in Iran screw it up.
Well, right, exactly.
So if he's being careful, at least...
It's smart.
I think it's smart of him to do that. Yeah. I think that it probably means that he actually intends to have a meaningful relationship with us instead of just doing photo ops at the UN.
Right, because he would have just...
He could have just done the photo op and then been like, guys, calm down. I don't give a shit about what they think.
And supposedly the reason that he ended up calling him anyway, he initiated the phone call.
Yeah.
The Iranian government did. And supposedly it was after John Kerry had like a really good meeting with the Iranian foreign minister.
Right.
Sort of like about the sort of, you know, their
nuclear
program.
Dispute. Yeah.
So the fact that that meeting happened and then the Iranian government initiated the phone call with President Obama seems heartening. I mean...
Yeah. You never know.
You don't know.
It's a wild card, always.
You can't.
But it's more heartening than what's been going on.
Right, exactly.
What's not more heartening than what's been going on is that we have a bunch of fucking teenagers representing the Israeli embassy in the U.S. Because the U.S.'s Israeli embassy released a fake LinkedIn profile for this new Iranian president. Calling him President of Iran, Expert Salesman, PR Professional, and Nuclear Proliferation Advocate.
Right, and they also listed some of his skills on the page as...
Weapons of mass destruction,
ballistics, and military justice.
Yeah. His bio is, since my election as president of Iran in 2013, I developed and executed an unprecedented PR campaign for the government of Iran through a series of statements, tweets, op-eds, and smiles. I have rebranded the human rights suppressing Ayatollah-led regime, the human rights suppressing Ayatollah-led regime as a moderate and a source of hope among the international community.
Right. Now, that's
smiles.
Not helping.
He's just walking. It's just a PR campaign of smiles that's winning everyone over.
I get that Israel isn't happy with Iran.
Yeah,
I get it.
I get
I'm not delusional here.
Right.
But, like...
This is not helping. This is the kind of bullshit that makes people annoyed that we
with
blindly
Israel.
Support them
yes.
on every fucking thing.
100%.
They're a bunch of overreacting juvenile military crazies.
Yes. And speaking of, Netanyahu is coming to the UN later this week. He's giving a speech, I think, on Tuesday, and he's meeting with Obama on Monday, and he's not happy.
Yeah, he's coming just to basically, like, offset the charm offensive that he's calling.
But here's the thing. If the reason that we are speaking to Iran in the first place is to talk them out of having nuclear weapons,
like,
why
how
the
is
hell
that
is,
bad for Israel?
Why is Israel so freaking mad about it? Because if you're Israel, you don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons, because if they're gonna use them on anybody, they're gonna use them on you.
Exactly.
So if Obama and this new potentially moderate president can get this thing figured out, then just shut your fucking trap.
I know. But this is the thing, is they, like, aren't acting like they want these issues in the Middle East to end. They never act that way in Israel. They're so aggressively anti us doing anything helpful
and if they're
to
not
establish
getting,
peace in the region.
And if they're not getting 100% of their way, then
they're
pissed.
They throw fits.
Yeah.
It's crazy. If they, you know...
I mean, you and I are both only children, and we know better.
Exactly. Exactly. No, this is one of the things that I think is frustrating about our relationship with Israel, because I get why we have a close relationship with them.
Of course, and I get why they're not happy with basically anyone else in the region.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not dumb.
Right.
I get it.
I feel like if they really were advocate, and this is not to say, by the way, that there are not a lot of people in Israel who are in favor of us establishing a meaningful peace process in the region. Most people in Israel probably are sick of this bullshit, too.
Yeah.
Because they're just New Yorkers.
It has to be.
They're just a bunch of New Yorkers living in the Middle East. They don't want to put up with bullshit. It's like angry old people. And, by the way, my doctor sees exclusively elderly Israelis and me, and that waiting room is the most terrifying place that you have ever seen. Israeli old people don't fuck around.
I'm sure.
That's some scary nonsense that's going on in there. Anyway, side note. But they are being sort of held hostage by their own crazy conservative people, and they, like us, are being held hostage by a religious conservative, you know, base that is causing so many of the issues that are in that region against the wills of the moderate people that live in Israel.
Yeah.
There's a ton of them. They have, you know, like, it's sort of like the Jerusalem-Tel Aviv divide.
But that's the case in so many places. In all of these places who have
sort of, like...
In Iran, exactly. I mean,
Iran
like,
was
there
a
are just
beacon
like,
of liberalism for a long time. Well, people are educated there.
Like, there's millions and millions and millions and millions of people in Iran who sort of like don't want to put up with this shit.
They're not wanting to put up with this shit. No, that was the deal in Afghanistan when the Taliban took control.
Right.
I mean,
nobody was
Afghanistan
interested in that after
had an
happened.
Educated middle class that didn't want to put up with this bullshit, but they got overrun by religious conservatives.
Crazy people. Yeah.
And that's what's happening in Israel as well.
Yeah.
I just wish that because we are allies with the religious crazy people in Israel, that we could talk some fucking sense into them.
Yeah.
Because these antics are not helping us or them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Agreed.
In lighter news.
I was going to say, in completely different news.
gay marriage starting in New Jersey.
Yeah, welcome.
Gays
welcome
are
to
getting
the club.
Married.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, a court sort of said that the gays could start getting married. They had a civil union law already in New Jersey, but basically said that they could go on, and they said that
the
it could
New Jersey
start,
Constitution protects their right to marry.
Yep, and it could happen on October 21st, and sort of seeing all of what has happened, like, you know, with the Supreme
right.
Court now.
I don't think a higher court's
like,
going
to
rule against
a, I mean,
that.
I guess it could potentially go to the, what, it could go to the, like, the New Jersey Supreme Court? I don't know, like, what their political leanings are, but if it gets to the Supreme Court, they're probably, I mean,
also,
we've heard that already.
In New Jersey, is the highest court the Supreme Court? Because in New York, the Supreme Court is the lowest court.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that weird?
That is really weird.
Like, if you get jury duty to the Supreme Court, that's, like, the lame one.
Gonna go have, like, a drunk driver
exactly.
case or something.
Yeah. drunk subway rider, a gum chewer on the subway, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, but in any case, I don't think a higher court is gonna overrule this, if only because it will just sort of work its way up the chain, and eventually it won't matter because the U.S. government protects your right to marry, so ultimately, if the Constitution has equal rights protections for anyone, it will sort of get ruled that
right.
it's interpreted the same way, I would assume.
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, and I made that up, so I don't know.
Sounded...
But based on my own science,
yeah.
that sounds right.
Yeah, exactly.
In other gay news, you can't eat Barilla pasta anymore, which is some bullshit.
I know. There were, as Lila and I were discussing earlier today, there were a lot of, like, gays and carbs jokes going around on Facebook earlier this week, which...
You know who this is affecting more than gays?
Who?
Gay sympathizers.
Right, exactly.
They're still eating carbs.
They are.
And now they can't buy Barilla pasta either.
Yeah.
And now they're pastaless.
Yeah.
What's a person to do?
I don't
they're
know.
They're going to have to buy store-brand pasta, which is some bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a disaster. P.S. Why bother saying anything if you're Barilla pasta?
I know.
Why say anything at all?
Well,
they were asked
also,
about featuring gay couples in their commercials, and that's how this all came up. It was sort of like... Why not say, well, it's under advisement?
Well, and also, like, the thing that he said was, like, also, like, the worst thing to say. Because,
yeah.
like, if you want to make, like, some sort of, like, derogatory, like, gay, you know, sort of statement or whatever, then, like, I mean, fine. I mean, it's not fine. We still would have caught wind of it, and we still would have been pissed off about
right.
it. But, like, what he said, basically, was a derogatory statement, coupled with, they can buy their pasta elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like,
well
okay.
All right. There's 1 trillion pasta purveyors out there in the world, so we'll do that.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Done.
I mean, I'm pissed because Barilla is often on sale at the supermarket.
It is. It's one of the cheaper ones.
It's one of the cheaper pastas out there.
Yeah.
But if I have to go buy pasta from, you know, Kroger brand, then that's what I have to do.
Sure.
You know, what can you do in that situation? It's going to taste
it.
The same. Maybe I'll start buying good pasta.
Oh, you could do
like
that.
Like fresh pasta.
Fresh pasta. You could start making your own pasta.
Yeah, I was doing that for a while, and it's really easy. It's surprisingly easy.
I'm sure it is.
Because you just take semolina flour and egg and mix
and
it,
eggs.
And then you just...
Yeah,
cut it into strips,
brain
and then
surgery.
You just put it in water, and you're
yeah,
all
I
set.
Mean, it's people have been doing it for thousands of years.
Exactly. It's one of those early foods that hasn't gotten more complicated over time.
Nope.
But in any case, now if you didn't know, you have to stop buying Barilla pasta.
Yep. Sorry, gays.
So much work. Anyway, in more exciting news,
Wendy Davis
is running for governor. She sort of has been making some noise about this recently and finally sort of said something that can only be interpreted to mean that she's doing it.
After that big filibuster, she sort of, like, made some comments about, like, how, you know, she did the whole sort of, like, song and dance about, like, well, you know, I'm going to think about it and there are big decisions to be made.
Like,
and
why
what,
else
like,
she
did
the
sort
filibuster?
Of, like, the... We talked about it, that a lot on the podcast. Yeah, that, like, we predicted she was sort of elected to do that filibuster. I mean, there was discussion amongst Democrats in Texas who was going to do that filibuster. And the reason that she was ultimately sort of, like, elected to do it was because she was, A, capable, and, B, sort of, like, people saw as a future sort of party star in the state.
Yeah.
So, you know, most everybody think that she's probably going to lose, but they're seeing it sort of, like, as a big sort of opportunity to really just sort of, like, see where the Democrats stand in Texas, because, you know, the last election was something like 55-41 or something like that. But if in 2014, you know, the Democrats have had their eye on Texas for a long time just because of changing demographics.
Well, and we've talked about this. A history of electing Democrats to stay in office there.
I mean, Ann Richards was, you know, a Democratic governor for a long time, and so she was beaten actually by George Bush.
Yeah.
And, but a lot of people think that if she can even so much as get sort of like 46 or 47%, like, that is a sign that, especially in 2016, that, like, you know, Texas Democrats have had a long time over the last really sort of like almost 20 years since Ann Richards lost, when the Republicans sort of took back over, as because there are a lot of there's a lot of big money in Texas, and a lot of that money doesn't go to local races for Democrats
in Texas. It goes to national races or races outside of the state.
Right, because, like, there's sort of, like, everybody just sort of thinks that there's no hope to, like, get any of these people elected. But if she can sort of, like, at least get it close in a way that looks like it would be worth... Then they have a fundraising apparatus. Like, they can start electing more Democrats to local office. They can start spending those on national elections. You know, I mean, especially if you have someone who sort of is... can appeal to a large swath of the population in Texas running for president in 2016, 2 years after 2014. If Wendy Davis gets 47% of the vote, you really think that maybe you can sort of make at least a bit of a play.
And there are some really prominent Texas Democrats that have, you know, like Jim Hightower is a prominent Texas Democrat. I think Molly Ivins is from Texas.
She is.
They have a long history of having Democratic people get elected there, but also they have, like, a pretty strong Democrat, or they used to have a pretty strong Democratic organization there.
Well, I mean, the South used to be, you know, there used to be a lot of Southern Democrats.
Yeah.
They don't exist anymore.
Well, and but in Texas specifically, those Democrats were not of the, quote, Southern Democrats. They weren't, like, Dixie Democrats. Like,
sure.
They weren't of the Southern Democratic strain that you find certain states abiding by, which are basically electing Republicans and, you know, that are calling themselves Democrats. In Texas, they had, like, a really progressive Democratic, you know, unit of sorts, because Texas is a really big state.
Yeah.
And when you have a really big state, you have room, and you have major, you know, educational institutions.
Yeah.
You have room for progressives to take hold.
Yeah.
And I think that probably in Texas, you know, there's a lot of, like, Jesus land out there. But there's places like Austin. There's Democrats living in other cities like Dallas and Houston, you know, other major cities.
But throughout the country, Jesus land isn't as heavily populated as non-Jesus land.
Exactly.
As
and
atheist
in Texas,
land.
That is also the case.
Right, exactly.
Like, Austin may...
Jesus land is doesn't have any people in it.
No. Austin may be in a sort of, like, black hole of nothing, but Austin sort of, like, dominates the discussion in Texas in a way that no other city really does.
Yeah.
You know, it's a national sort of city more than anything else, and the fact that that city exists in Texas is hope for Texas.
Exactly. Yes. So fingers crossed she can sort of do something. It would be great to just... I mean, nobody thinks she's going to win.
No. But if she gets close, that's enough.
It's enough.
That's what's genius about this plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Just getting close is enough.
Exactly. You don't have to win.
You don't have to win.
I would love that. I want every sort of thing that's going on in my life to be like that, basically.
Well, and I
well,
think
it was good
this
enough.
Is a great Perfect. Sign for not just Texas, but for other states like Arizona that are in the process of turning blue.
Totally.
Like, if Texas turns blue, the world is our oyster.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, once Texas
we'll
turns
never
blue,
lose another election.
We'll never lose another election again.
Yeah.
And if it start, if Texas becomes the latest swing state, and it's not Florida, and it's not all these other dumb states.
Well, and that's...
We have a lot more to work with, because Texas has a lot more in common with New York and California than it does with any other state.
Well, and not only, you know, we talked about how, you know, it would be nice to be able to have Democrats be able to spend money in the state on their own candidates. It would also be nice to force Republicans to spend money there, too. Because right now, Republicans don't have to spend a damn dime there.
Exactly.
If they were having...
And that's a money suck.
If they were having... Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a lot of huge... some of the biggest television markets... Like, if they're having to buy a bunch of boatload of ad time in Texas to win a presidential election, that's huge.
Yeah. That's good news for all.
Yeah.
In other good news for all, more people are jumping on our Hillary Clinton bandwagon.
First off, let's talk about that for just a second. Because we're going to reference a specific story here
right
now. But just within the last week...
Everyone and their mother suddenly knows.
There was
knows.
An article on CNN that about made me just throw something, because it was basically, you know, it was a more poorly written version of the blog that we wrote a freaking year ago, yeah. like, that was our Hillary takedown. It's super in vogue right now to, like, to be hating on Hillary Clinton. And also, not just hating on her, but discussing about how she can't win in 2016.
Election. Well, I never understood where all of the sudden interest in her running came from in the first place. Well, I was baffled by that to begin with. But we both said a year and a half ago or whenever we were talking about this for the first time that there was no way that this momentum would maintain itself all the way into 2016. There's the early front runner never wins. Rick Perry was a front runner at one point to be president.
Michelle Bachmann won the Ames straw poll.
Exactly. Like, there are some complete idiots who had literally 0% chance of being president that have been, quote, front runners at various times. And, you know, I think that Ted Cruz is an early front runner as well, and I don't think that he's going to make it out of the primaries either. Brent just acted like I was wrong, but I'm definitely right, and you can quote me on that.
I think he can make it out of a primary.
Well, I think he can make it out of a Senate primary. I don't think he's going to make it out of the presidential primary.
Yeah, he might not be able to.
Too many Republicans hate him. The reason that someone like Mitt Romney makes it out of the primary is the presidential primary doesn't go as crazy as the local primaries do. Always try to find somebody that they think could appeal to everyone.
Right.
Because they don't have enough people in the Republican Party to actually elect a president. Democrats win the popular vote every year.
Right.
So they have to elect somebody who could sort of jump to the middle if they need to.
And who's sort of like milquetoast enough to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And... So I don't think
buy it.
So I don't think that he can make it out of the
primaries. I'm with you now. Talked me into it.
Yeah, well, I'm a genius. But I think that Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton are sort of in the same boat. Because being the early front runner is never a good thing. Brent and I were just not interested in her to begin with. But we knew there would reach a point where enough people were talking about her that suddenly we would realize that no one is interested in her.
But now there...
Because once we're talking about her, then we have to talk about her.
Right. Well, and there was an article this week in New York Mag, and it was basically sort of like talking about like how to beat Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And it's sort of like, I mean,
one is the banking regulation, because she's kind of in bed with big business.
She's in bed with big business. And also, I mean, sort of like, you know, all of the deregulation sort of like with the financial system that sort of brought us to where we sit currently, and at least the financial crisis in 2008 was started under the Clinton years. I mean, the repeal of Glass-Steagall happened under him, and that's sort of like, at least in terms of the... That's where this all began, and that's sort of like how we're ending up with these too-big-to-fail situations. And there are a lot of people in the Senate, you know, Elizabeth Warren, whether she'll run or not is, you know, who knows.
Right.
But I mean, like, there are a lot of people who are sort of like campaigning just like to break up some of these big financial institutions.
Yes.
And like this New York Mag article sort of basically said that Wall Street and sort of these big banks is going to be in 2016 what Iraq was in 2008. And that was sort of like her Achilles heel, because she had voted for that resolution to go into Iraq, and that's why she lost. I mean, had she not voted for that, she'd be the president right now.
Yeah.
And I think that the same thing could happen in 2016, and we've been talking about that for a long time.
Of course.
I mean,
there have recently been several profiles that have sort of linked her with some unsavory figures
right.
as well. So, you know, there was the issue of Doug Band, who's the Clinton Foundation CEO that is up to some nonsense.
Well, and the Clintons have always been sort of like linked to unsavory people.
Yeah.
And I think a certain degree, like unfairly so. But
sure,
I mean, like,
I also, they operate like a fucking mob. You know, they endorsed Bill de Blasio, but the way that they endorsed Bill de Blasio had to come out and be like, I'm part of the Clinton family.
Right.
And I was like, that is such a weird language. That's such weird language.
They're hosting
to
use. A fundraiser for him, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, they're hosting a fundraiser for him. But I mean, he said it almost like he had just joined the mafia. Like, and there were people that, when they did this article about Doug Band, that were afraid to have their name go on the record because they were fearing retaliation from the Clintons.
Yeah.
They operate like a mob because they're that powerful. And I'm not saying that they're also secretly killing people in hits, you know, all over town or whatever.
Right.
But
there are people that think that.
There are people who think that.
But
I don't think that personally. But I mean, I think in the financial sense, that is what they're doing. They're sort of like in bed with a lot of unsavory financial characters that are sort of ordering hits on the economy, if you will, if you want to follow me on this metaphor.
Sure. I'm with you.
Yeah. And I think that that is sort of ultimately part of the problem, is that the perception is that they're almost like a mafia. They act almost like a mafia. There's nothing else. There's no other way to present them, because everyone already has this impression, and it's right.
Right. Well, and when you think about sort of like what just recently happened, Larry Summers sort of like recently pulled his name out of the running to run the Fed.
Right.
Larry Summers, and the reason that he did that is because people on the left were so furious that he would even be considered for that. He is like directly linked to the Clintons.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think that that right there is sort of like a sign of what could potentially be to come for her, because
yeah.
I just don't... I just,
I also think that given the kind of opposition that we've been facing in Congress with the Tea Party, that anybody who's associated with such a far right wing of the Democratic Party is going to have a difficult time having their message resonate with regular Democrats.
I agree.
We've been saying, I mean, that's why we're always saying that a populist needs to run. I think that, as we've been saying, and I think everyone is sort of picking up on this finally, the Clintons aren't populist. The Clintons can't even play populist. There's no way for them to suddenly pretend they're populist. They're in bed with the banks. They're in bed with CEOs. They're in bed with money. And they operate like a mafia, as I just used extensively in metaphor form.
Yes.
But, I mean, there's no way for them to resonate with the people that they need to resonate with. That's how she got beat in the first place.
Especially
that was true 6 years ago, and it's true now.
Especially with primary voters. I think, similarly to Ted Cruz, she has more of a problem in a primary than she does in a general, I think.
No, absolutely.
Probably. I mean, I think she could win a general election, I think.
Exactly.
Probably.
I think that she's a good general candidate. I don't think she's my general candidate. I mean, I certainly would not be happy with her as a candidate. That would be a third party year for me, for sure.
Probably.
But I think she's sort of a Republican, so she could sort of get everyone's vote circumstance, you know, in that sense. But I think that she can't win a primary just by virtue of being herself. There's not enough things that she can say to take back the conservatism that we associate with her to sort of like make that work.
Yeah.
And people are knowing it now.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the momentum is dying down.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton is.
Yeah, now whether this was a slip-up or not, who knows, but he was on, I think, ABC or CBS this morning
this
or something, or this week, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And this morning they were sort of, like, asking him about, like, a potential Hillary Clinton candidacy in 2016, and he was quoted as saying, the next one will be better, it will be different. And then he said, whether she's in it or not, they're all different.
Yeah.
But, like, just the way that he started that sentence, I feel like, is sort of like...
They're certain that she's running.
Yeah, that might have been an oops.
There's time for them to go back on that, though.
Well, of course.
There's always time for that.
Yeah.
You never declare your candidacy this early. That's because the first person out of the gate is the first person that gets shot down because you have the most time to fact check things and, you know.
I'm still, like, granted he said this, and maybe I'm just, like, entirely delusional, but the one thing that the Clintons are not is stupid.
Yeah.
And they're also not power hungry either. So, who knows? But, like, it would still not entirely shock me if she decides not to run. I think that she'll run. I'm pretty certain that she is. I'm probably 90% certain. But as we get closer and closer and closer, it seems to be like, it just becomes less likely that it makes sense.
Well, I was going to say, in the if things were as they are right now, it would shock me if she didn't run. In 2 months, when everyone has jumped on the bandwagon of hating Hillary, I could see her not running. Like, I think with the way that the momentum is sort
of
dying down.
They can read the tea leaves, I think, the Clintons.
I think that by the time they actually have to declare, it'll sort of already be over. Which it currently is not.
Right.
Once it's over, it'll be over.
Right.
If you needed more on that, check our website. meanwhile, in wonderful news.
Oh, God. We haven't talked about Alan West, and so it's going to, like, give me great joy to be able to tag Alan West in this podcast, because it's been forever.
We had a special tag for him, because we've talked about it so much.
So often.
The last story that we brought you was that he was going to work at a company called Pajamas Media.
Which is hilarious.
Which is hilarious.
And he was also becoming their director of programming for Next Generation TV, which was supposed to, like, be, like, an outreach for, like, youth.
It was a web series that he was going to be doing that was a pay service.
Yeah,
that was
that's
a youth
right.
outreach
yes,
pay
right.
service.
You had to pay for it. Yeah,
which was the dumbest thing we've ever heard of.
Anyway,
but anyway, after calling someone a Jap, which
he's not doing that anymore.
Turns out, Pajamas Media, despite liking people like Alan West being around, is not trying to call people Jewish American princesses all over the place, and certainly is not trying to have Alan West call people Jewish American princesses.
No.
This is funny to me only because. That was sort of like, that term came back into vogue for a while when I was in high school.
Really?
It was something that it was a derogatory thing that you would say in like the 70s.
Right, but don't people refer to them as such now though, actually?
Yes.
I thought.
It's like the word queer.
Right.
Like people have taken it back.
Yes, exactly.
So for a long time, you would refer to things as Jappy when I was in high school, like all the time. This maybe is because I went to a high school that had a high proportion of Jewish people at
a high Jap population.
Exactly.
Right.
This is not, well, not even, because New York City itself is not like sort of, there's some outer borough, you know, quote, Jappiness that we were referring to. It's mostly a Long Island phenomenon.
That's a Long Island thing, yeah, exactly.
And so part of it was that we were sort of, we would use it to make fun of elements of sort of larger Jewish culture that were less than savory. And the sort of excessive wealth of Long Island, you know, that the kind of like tacky wealth that goes along with Long Island Japs.
Sure.
But it's funny to me that we've now come back to it being derogatory full circle. It was always derogatory, but it became acceptable again for a while.
Well, it's one of those things that even when it's acceptable for, like, you know, people in high school to be using, or people to be, like, calling themselves or whatever, but, like, for Alan West.
Alan West
to
can't
be, like,
say it.
Alan West
it's
can't
like
say
how
that
I can't use the N-word.
You can't use the N-word.
Yeah.
No.
Alan West can't say Jap.
Nope.
But I just said it. So screw it. That's... Well, and there's a... Isn't there a reality show now?
It's called Princess's Long Island.
Princess's Long Island.
Yes,
it's a show
Bravo.
About Japs, though.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, that's what it... Yeah.
It's totally. They call themselves Japs.
Yes,
the
they're all like... Yeah, they're... They do, actually. Yes.
And that's a funny show because there is literally nothing about it that I can identify as a thing that's familiar to me whatsoever. But it's like the most... It's like Jersey Shore. It's like... Yeah. It takes a type that I've come in vague contact with and just, like, takes it to an extreme that is, like, real shocking.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it is basically Jersey Shore. They're just like the people on Jersey Shore, P.S.
I would say a little
less. It's the same
less, but...
type of, like... The Jersey Shore people are, like, the poor man's version of the... Because they're not actually rich.
They're not rich. No, they're not.
The Jersey Shore is sort of, like, the poor version of what this Long Island sort of, like, Jap culture is all about.
Yeah.
Because it's a much more sort of, like, label conscious.
Yeah, true.
Version of that, but it's like sort of the same type of people.
Yeah,
there's a lot of slicked back hair involved. There's totally. Too much makeup being worn. Mm-hmm. People are wearing heels that are way too high,
way too big.
Like a lot of that's going on. Mm-hmm. And people are fake tanning to a degree that is not safe.
Yeah, it's not.
Which I was not aware was a thing on Long Island, but is apparently a thing. Who knew?
Not shocked.
Not shocked. Yeah.
Oh God! In final news, oh man, this is crazy. First off, I have a lot of questions about this story, but basically, the story is about. There are a few groups in Kansas who are suing, or they're bringing a suit in to the
Board of Education.
Board of yes, exactly. So they passed some standards where, God forbid,
they were going to teach some science.
Yeah, teachers in Kansas now have to teach science. They're science standards.
Yeah.
And Christians aren't happy about that because they don't believe in science.
It's violating their rights to be Christians by forcing their children to know things that, to know facts.
Are sciencey.
Sciencey facts.
Yeah.
If there was ever a state that would have this problem, it would be Kansas.
Well, right, but here's my main question about this is, how did Kansas end up passing these?
I know.
I just don't know how Kansas ended up deciding to teach science.
Teach science in the first place, I know.
Because it seems like such an un-Kansas-like thing to do. Like,
it's, I have wondered for a long time when people in Kansas who are fairly reasonable would be, like, sort of over this whole thing. Because this has been going on for so long in Kansas. Kansas is the state of, like, abortion doctor murders. It's the state of, like, Ten Commandments being displayed in various places.
It's the state of Sam Brownback.
It's the state of Sam Brownback. It's a state that has long rallied against science.
Right.
I think that there's probably some people in Kansas. I mean, Kansas is right next to Iowa.
It's also the state of Catherine Sebelius.
Exactly. It's a state that has other people in it.
Correct.
Like, at some point I was like, those people have to be motivated enough to, like, try something basic like teaching science. Like, this is not
right.
This is not change. This is not single payer healthcare.
No.
It's
educating children.
It's educating children. Right. It's like one of the things that the state is charged with already.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You so, have to do it. So you might as well try and get it right.
So I've often thought to myself, there's just got to be some people that, and maybe they're not in favor of abortions, and maybe they're not in favor of all this other stuff. But like we know people from Kansas. And their families aren't walking around not teaching science.
No.
Like,
no, they're not.
They're not hanging out with other people that don't believe
in
science.
We have a few friends from Kansas.
We have several good friends from Kansas. And their families are not anti-science.
No.
So, admittedly, we only know people that left Kansas.
Right, that lived here at one point or still live here.
Exactly. Yes. But my point is that I've often thought to myself, is there like a saturation point where regular old people in Kansas are like, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
We gotta teach some fucking evolution in here. Like... It's, like, our children need to know the basic facts of science.
Yeah.
It would be crazy not to.
Yeah.
So, in any case, that's not going to be happening anytime soon in Kansas because they're going to be embroiled in a lawsuit about whether or not they're violating religious rights. My question is, once this kind of lawsuit goes on, like, do, like, the Scientologists need to... I mean, we're not learning Scientologist history in school. You know,
we're not learning about Xenu.
Their belief in how the world started is way crazier than what Christians believe.
Right.
Like, Mormons aren't also suing, but could they be?
Right.
Could it suddenly be that we have to learn so many kinds of science and history that it becomes an overwhelming burden?
The problem is that there's only one kind of
science
to learn. Then
there's
1,000 theologies to learn.
Yeah.
But they only want us to learn the Christian one.
Yeah.
So that's what's so ridiculous about this whole situation in the first place.
I would argue that if we have to learn that, we have to learn all of them.
I would too.
What was ancient Sumerian religion saying about this?
Well, let's find out.
You know. I actually did learn that in school.
Of course you did.
That was something that we covered in history class.
Uh-huh.
But not in science class.
Yeah.
In science class, it was straight science.
But maybe we should be learning about how Joseph Smith met Jesus with the Native Americans in Illinois. I mean,
maybe
that happened,
exactly.
Apparently.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we should learn about how Mormonism started by someone finding a book under a rock. A 14-year-old boy finding a book under a rock in upstate New York.
You know, it would really get their goat is if we had to learn the Islamic creation story.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I can only imagine.
Heads would fucking explode.
I know. And of all of the other things that we could be learning, that's probably the most similar to what they think.
I'm sure. It's probably the exact
same
story. With different names, probably.
Yeah.
And,
well, essentially, isn't Islam just sort of like a latter-day sort of Christianity-style... I mean, it's all based on the same original
Muhammad
theology.
Muhammad was just sort of like another
new
prophet basically.
Who's He's just sort of the next prophet. The
same God.
It's like how Jews cut it off at the first Testament, and then Christians sort of had their own book, but they also have the first... I feel like people... Like, Muslims just sort of, like, have the later version of Christianity.
Yeah, it's the sequel. It's the...
It's the trequel. What's the one that comes after the sequel? It's not a trequel.
It's not. It
That's
is now.
A great word, though. I'm going to start using that for sure. And in actual final news, because Brent said this was the final news, but the actual news is that Grey's Anatomy premiered.
We posted a fairly hilarious conversation that Lila and I had earlier in the week, because... Lila didn't see...
I stopped watching after...
Right.
Halfway through last season, I got to a point where I was like, no.
Well, we talked about it a lot last season, and you'll remember if you were listening at that point that Lila sort of declared that she was quitting watching. And she actually did.
And I did.
She really went for it.
I went for it.
She's been declaring that she's going to quit playing Candy Crush for a long time,
but
she can't do that. She's not going
to...
But Grey's Anatomy, she was able
to
give up.
To the degree that Brent claimed it the day that I caught him on Facebook playing Candy Crush after he told me he'd given it up.
But I have quit.
Yeah, now he's playing Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. You know what? Shut up.
But in any case, we watched the season premiere.
I've seen it twice. Because I had sort of... We don't need to go into all the details, but I got stuck at my house yesterday.
Right.
And the only thing to do was watch Grey's Anatomy. I was trying to hold out, but
I've
seen it twice now.
That's a sad set of events.
Yeah, exactly. Once you're being forced
to watch
it.
Once you have nothing to watch but Grey's Anatomy.
It happened.
It was...
2 hours.
It was as I suspected. Everything that I suspected would happen, happened. I'm getting really good at predicting how episodes will end once they've begun.
Well, you knew immediately that who was going to die.
Yeah.
Somebody dies.
Well, I knew for a fact that the chief wasn't going to die.
Well, no, because we had read about the fact
that his
contract extension.
Like, we know for a fact that if Christina looks like she's in peril at the end of this season, it will be because Sandra Oh was leaving the show. But I don't think they're going to kill her off because they probably want her to come back for guest starring roles.
Yeah, probably so.
We knew for
They're going to send her off to, like, some... fancier hospital or something
exactly.
like that.
I was predicting, as I was right to, that this Arizona Cali thing would just descend into some melodramatic nonsense.
And it did
Here's
it ever.
What's sad about it. I still found it the most compelling storyline on the episode.
It was.
Too bad.
Any of those, you know, the other sort of, I think, what was supposed to be compelling was that What's-Her-Face intern died. And any of them could die.
They could all die tomorrow on the show, and I'd be like,
doesn't matter.
Life. Brent and I were discussing how we would watch a Grey's Anatomy, and we started listing people that we would like to see on our new Grey's Anatomy, and it was only original cast members, basically.
And
if they could just do the first season again, I would be like, great.
I still don't know any of those people's names.
No.
I'm still calling, Smash,
yeah,
from Friday Night Live.
That's what we're having
Friday
to do.
Friday Night Lights, yeah.
There's no other way to identify them.
Who knows what his name is?
No.
And then the other two were just...
Still don't know. The girl who died, I'm never going to find out her
Blondie
name.
Blondie and Marbles and whatever. There's the black girl,
if
too.
If you don't know who Marbles is, she's the one who's British in real
Camilla
life.
Camilla Luddington.
Yes.
British.
She's the one who's British in real life and speaks like she has marbles in her mouth.
Yeah, so
like her and Owen both have marbles, the disease.
Yeah.
But in any case, it was a 2-hour long episode.
It
lasted
long.
All 2 hours, as an episode often will. And when a sort of like a lesbian breakup is the most compelling thing that's happening on your show. Not even a lesbian childcare dispute, essentially.
That's sort of what
is the most compelling thing that's happening on an episode of 2-hour television.
Yes.
And it's not the L word. Then, because I was about to say then you have problems, but then I was like, but I watched all 6 seasons of the L word religiously.
Weren't you getting together to watch the L word like in a group of your lesbian friends?
Yeah. It was a group of me and, like, it was, like, me, two other straight people, and, like, a room full of lesbians that would get together every week and watch The L Word.
I love that.
I just saw some of them this weekend.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they're doing well. Nice. But in any case.
I wonder if they're watching this Grey's Anatomy storyline.
I mean, they wouldn't be able, there's no reason to, as an L Word fan, tune into Grey's Anatomy for this storyline. The fact that it was the most compelling storyline on the show doesn't speak to the show's compellingness overall.
Right, I know, but, like, I'm wondering if they have sort of, like, the same...
If they feel, like, invested in it.
Well, right, because, like, I feel like a lot of gay people are sort of, like, feel almost like that they're sort of, like, obligated to watch anything that sort of, like, has gay characters on it. So I'm wondering if the lesbians are thinking that they need to be really taking sides in the Cali and Arizona situation.
That
would be
a sad state of events to be stuck in, to have to watch Grey's Anatomy just for that storyline.
It would be upsetting.
Because it was, like... It was
well. That's how I
one
felt
and a
when
half
I was,
hours of nothing of other stuff.
I mean, everybody just assumes that being from sort of like the generation that I'm from, and as a gay person, that I saw every episode of Queer as Folk.
Yeah,
but it was too terrible to watch.
Yeah, you couldn't watch
so
that.
So you couldn't watch
no,
it.
Of course
but
not.
Almost there are a lot of reasonable, intelligent gay people that I know who are my age that could just like recite the entire series for you just off the top of their head.
People are watching Glee.
Well,
that's happening
true.
Too.
Yeah.
In 5 years, you're gonna be able to say what you just said about Queer as Folk about Glee.
Probably.
Yeah. Except you won't be able to because you've seen a lot of Glee.
And I, well, yes, I would contend that Glee is worse.
Well, yes, I'm not gonna argue you on that. But in any case, if that's the most compelling storyline that you have on an episode of Grey's Anatomy,
yeah,
then you're not doing the medical drama right.
At least Debbie Allen was sort of on beasting around and shouting at everybody who was like within earshot,
doing some shouting.
She was banging on a wall. She was doing all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah. There was...
I always approve of that.
There was a cheerleading routine at one point. Nope. Don't do that.
No.
They're obviously, like, setting up these new characters to be, like, the next class.
They can't
And while
be.
That's a good idea in theory...
I get it. They're all so boring. And
yeah,
I don't...
Well,
not only are
the
they
show
being...
The show is totally different now.
Well, that's the thing. And not only are they being written poorly, but they're just so... Bland and
yeah,
just
they're bland.
Boring. They just couldn't be any less interesting.
Well, and I think part of that is that in the sort of tonal shift of the show, like if you look at the first season of Grey's Anatomy, which I rewatched last year for unknown reasons.
Yeah, we talked about this.
It's like really dark. It's like a really dark show.
Yeah.
Everyone dies on it.
Well, and even just the look of it.
All the patients die. The lighting is darker. It's more sort of like hyper-real. You know, it's more realistic. This is very hyper-realistic, but the original show is very realistically shot.
Well, now it's just so soapy.
It's
and
glorified
it even,
General
it even,
Hospital.
It even, yeah, exactly. It even looks like a soap. Like, there was that whole scene with April Kepner when she was, like, talking to Avery, and then, like, her boyfriend who had proposed to her is in the background, and they do sort of, like,
a soap opera moment.
They do, like, a rack focus, like, from April, like, to, like, the guy who was, like, standing sort of, like, just, like, scheming in the
background.
And it was just sort of like, this is bad.
Well, and I'm about to say something that my mom's going to find controversial. I think that Bailey has become annoying. And she was, aside from Christina, my favorite character on that show for a long time.
Yeah.
And I sort of can't tolerate her anymore.
But they're also giving her terrible things to do as well.
Well, it's not the actress's fault.
No.
She's great. I would still maintain that she's great.
Yeah.
I just feel like the character of Bailey was so great in the original episodes. And she's become this, like, kind of, this, like, whiny person who just snaps at everyone and, like, is married to some guy that no one's ever seen. And I don't need her to have a personal storyline at all.
No.
P.S.
You just need her to
be... No interest in that.
You need her to... Well, her storyline worked for so long because she had sort of, like, underlings.
Yes.
And she was very snappy.
Exactly.
And, like, it was hilarious sort of, like, watching her kind of, like, basically, like, put them all in their place.
Yeah.
And now she, like, sort of, like, doesn't have that. Like,
yeah,
she
doesn't... Bring in a new class and give her...
Right.
Put her in charge of them.
Let her yell at these interns.
Exactly. Like, why is... Like, these... The sort of, like, having them be under, like... Derek and under... Like, I'm not trying to be listening to Derek's...
Snore.
Snore at them. Yeah, not snore at them.
He doesn't
He's just sort of, like, smarmying at them.
Yeah.
Smarmying is a word that I've just made up.
We should talk to Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah. Shonda Rhimes, well, we can't. She's not there. She's got, like, 12 other shows
true.
Going on.
She's
it's some other person
She's writing a
there.
Different terrible show.
It's like... And this is going to make me sound like a nerd. So I'm just... But I'm going with it. It's like how... It's like the turn that Buffy the Vampire Slave makes.
Oh, boy.
Slayer, not Slave. Slave. I just called her a vampire slave. It's like the turn that Buffy the Vampire Slayer makes when Joss Whedon sort of, like, goes off to do Angel and Marty Noxon comes on. And suddenly, like, there's, like, scenes of, like, Buffy, like, having sex, like, in a club at one point, like, staring longingly over the people, and she dies, and, like, all this stuff happens. It's super dark.
You lost me here.
Yeah.
But keep going.
It's, all this stuff happens. It's, like, really, really dark. The show took, like, a, like, it used to be sort of, like, a light comedy that had vampires in it. And it took this, like, really dark, depressing turn. And there were some episodes that were, like, sort of interesting and experimental.
Sure.
But it was, like, someone new came on board who had a slightly darker vision for where it was going. And, like, it got weird. And I feel like the opposite has happened here. Where someone kind of dark and interesting wrote some great... like, those original characters were great.
Yeah.
I wish they hadn't all died off. I wish Katherine Heigl didn't think she was such a big shot and hadn't left the show, because I even liked her on the show, and I've never liked her in anything since.
Nope.
But it's like someone with a soapier version, this sort of like Two and a Half Men version of Grey's Anatomy took over, and suddenly everyone's like, the colors got brighter, and like the hairstyles got real fancy. Mm-hmm. If you look at those first season, the thing that I noticed the most is that Meredith's hair is a mess in every scene.
Yeah.
She looks like she can't put a ponytail in her own hair. Like, that's what needed to happen. In any case.
That's it.
There it is. So now you know. Now you don't have to watch it.
And you probably shouldn't.
Definitely don't. It was so long.
It's too long.
It's way too long.
Yeah.
We will talk to you next week.
Yes.
The government will either be shut down or not.
Probably will be.
It probably will be.
From what it sounds like.
Here's a thing that I think a lot of people are wondering about that I'm going to clarify based on no information. The police department is not going to stop functioning. Your city government is not going to stop functioning. This is a federal government shutdown.
Yes.
You pay taxes to your state so that their state government will stay open.
Yes.
So it's not like we're going to become like a lawless land of crazy. It just means that federal legislation is not going to move and that your friends that work in D.C. are going to be sad.
Right.
So it's not like the DMV is going to close. You know? I mean, it's not going to be great for anyone.
Right.
But like, and there's federal funding that goes into all of these things that you kind of want. But like, it's not going to be the kind of end of the world that I think a lot of people are thinking government shutdown means. It's just going to be sort of, like, fucking annoying.
Exactly.
And we're going to have to deal with some nonsense.
So we'll update you on that next week.
Yeah. We'll update you throughout the week on our Facebook page.
Yes.
Which is on Facebook. I was going to give you the web address, and I was like, I can't do that. It's on Facebook. It's Brain Trust Live. Find us.
Yeah.
And you can also find the link on our website, which is just braintrustlive.com.
Which is easy.
Exactly.
You should be able to remember
that.
If you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah. And check out our Tumblr page, because we will be posting a list of the compromises
Democrats
have made, so that when people tell you that that's the case, you can argue against that talking point.
Yeah, and if you can think of any more, because we probably missed some.
Yeah,
let
add
us
those
know.
In the comments.
Yeah. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
We would love to hear your thoughts on it. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.